Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Agrotech Foods Limited Q2 FY19 earnings conference call hosted by Anand Rathi Shares and Stock Brokers. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Ms. Sonam Samani from Anand Rathi Shares and Stock. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thanks a lot, Janice. Good afternoon, everyone. On behalf of Anand Rathi Shares and Stock Brokers, I welcome you all to Agrotech Foods Limited Q2 FY19 earnings conference call. We have with us on the call senior management of the company, represented by Mr. Sachin Gopal, Managing Director, and Mr. Arijit Dutta, CFO. I would now like to hand over the call to Mr. Sachin Gopal for his opening comments. Thanks, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Sonam, and good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for taking out the call to be with us today. We have posted on our website, and I think many of you would have already seen this, a summary of the results for this quarter, right? In case you haven't, if you log on to our website, www.atfoods.com, and go into the investor relations, you can get an overview of the results for this quarter. So, broadly speaking, net sales for the quarter were up about 7% in total. On a comparable basis, this figure is closer to 8% because, as you would have seen in the notes to the accounts, there was also a charge on account of new accounting regulations, a reclass, if you will, right? So if you can just bear that 8% number in mind because that also is contextually related to the other numbers that I'll be talking about. This was driven largely by strong volume growth in the foods business and the impact of pricing on commodity edible oils, right? The impact of the pricing on commodity edible oils, which is Crisil, is very visible in the difference between the volume and the value growth of the Crisil business in the quarter, and the volume growths, which are reasonably strong in the food business, are evident in each of those products that we will be talking about. In total, therefore, we continue to see a strong growth in the food business. It's grown up about 17% to about 62 crores for the quarter, and it now represents about 29% of our total revenues in quarter two FY19. To place that into context, when we started our journey, the food share was about 2%, and we had said that our first milestone will be now to get to about 50%, where the largest share of our business is foods, and that will materially change the portfolio of the company and our financial dependence on edible oils. In terms of the individual products, ready-to-cook snacks, as you would see from the release, grew by about 4% in the quarter in volume and about 5% in value. Across the board, you will see volume and value now starting to come together because we took a lot of pricing actions and volume actions post the implementation of GST, with the base now reflecting much of where we are today and having changed considerably between quarter one and quarter two. You will see some closing of the gap, and I think this will continue as well as we go through the rest of the year. The growth of the ready-to-cook snacks, as we mentioned in our release, was largely driven by distribution expansion and innovation, including the introduction of Diet Pop. Advertising expenses were actually lower for the quarter because we did see margin compression on edible oils. Quarter two last year actually was our peak margin in FY18, right? And as you will see from the advertising and promotion spend, these were actually lower. So this 5% comes on the basis of lower spending but completely driven by new consumer acquisition, distribution expansion, and, of course, innovation. The ready-to-eat snacks business continued to deliver very, very strong growth. We grew by about 79% in the quarter. And the good thing is that all three segments within this have registered a very good performance. So we already had a reasonably good model in place as far as tortilla chips is concerned, right, where, as you are aware, we've positioned ourselves very nicely in the category, right? And we are probably about 20% behind our closest multinational competitor, but yet making a decent margin, right? But now it's not only tortilla chips. Ready-to-eat popcorn has also started doing well. We started to get scale in that. And extruded snacks as well. Actually, we made very, very good progress this quarter. So this is actually looking good, and we would certainly expect to maintain or improve this as we go forward in the year. In terms of the spreads business, this is largely peanut butter today. The peanut butter business continue to perform well, as many of you know, and if you can see in our website, we've launched a peanut butter and jelly variant. That's also doing well. And we also launched what we call better for you segments, which is the natural range, lower sugar, etc. All of these pieces are doing well. I think we are in a strong position in the peanut butter segment. We got the right cost structure in place as a company. We have all the distribution capabilities that are required to maintain clear leadership in this segment, and we're just in a happy place to be able to continue to leverage category growth to be able to drive that as well, and to do so in a very profitable manner. That was primarily it on the food business. As far as the edible oil business is concerned, we mentioned that commodity edible oils continue to experience revenue growth ahead of volume due to higher prices. Tariff first got imposed in, I think, in the month of November 2017. That is also reflected in the margin that we had in quarter three and quarter four of the last fiscal, right? And also some impact of currency movements currently, right? So this is not so visible in the case of Sundrop. In the case of Sundrop, both the value and the volume is relatively similar. And the reason for that is that we actually, if you go into the pricing in the marketplace, we haven't really even crossed the pre-GST prices of last year, right? So there's a reasonable amount of cost that we actually absorbed as a company in this. And that is also to ensure that we are fully compliant with all the anti-profiteering guidelines. However, in the crystal business, which is a commodity business, it's a clear pass-through. So there the volume growth is 2%, but the revenue growth is about 20% for the quarter. So in sum, therefore, financial highlights are net sales growth of about 7%, 8% on a comparable basis, driven by volume-driven growth in the strategic foods business and pricing-driven growth in the edible oils business. While the foods business saw strong growth in both revenue and margin, the edible oil business saw short-term compression on margin, which was offset by lower expenses. And as you can see from the expense lines, we pretty much managed to ensure that this has been achieved. Employee benefits at about 12 crores were higher than prior year by about 9 lakhs. Depreciation at about 40, close, a little under 45, 4.5 crores was higher than prior year by about 10 lakhs. And we also wanted you to know that other income includes the impact of about 56 lakhs in income from investment in mutual funds. So just for you to know where that money is coming in. And as a consequence, profit before tax was up 5% and profit after tax was up by about 6%. So that really closes our commentary. Hopefully you have all these tables with you, so you will not need to ask questions about this when we can discuss other things, if you will, other than providing context. Just one other point, you may have noticed that we also announced as a company that we have entered the cereal business. Now, I just want to take a few minutes to explain to you what we are planning or what is the logic for this. We already have a very good coverage of about 400,000 stores in the country, and it's a robust coverage today because we have a portfolio which expands, which works from 5 rupee product, which you need to be able to service the smallest beats within your coverage universe, right up to products which are 100 rupees, 500 rupees, so on and so forth. Right? So we have a good, I would say, distribution infrastructure of about 400,000 stores. We are now in a position where we can actually harness this distribution infrastructure to enter categories with inherently higher margins, where inherent category margins are higher, so that we can actually have a deceptive positive impact as far as our profitability is concerned. If you will notice, we have actually done this to an extent in tortilla chips, where we operate at a price point which is about, say, 20% below Doritos. But we are actually making a good margin because our cost structure is extremely good. I've talked about this earlier, that our cost structure, both in terms of capital expenditure and in terms of operating expenditure, is increasingly becoming an area of strength as far as we are concerned. So we've reviewed and we've been reviewing over time what are the other categories that we can get into. And we've concluded that there are two categories that are of interest to us, where inherent category margins are much better than, let's say, our core business. So, for example, if you're in the edible oil business and you say, well, you know, I make a 25% gross margin, the products that you sell on that 25% gross margin are considered to be premium, right? But if, on the other hand, you're in the snacks business and you make a 25% margin, your products are perceived to be affordable, right? Similarly, if you sell chocolates and you make a 35% margin, the products are still considered to be affordable, right? So the inherent margin in some of these categories is much better. The two categories, therefore, that we have chosen to focus on and explain, therefore, the logic behind this entry is, one is breakfast cereals. That's about a 2,500-odd crore category, growing at about 20% a year. And the second, which we will be entering into due course, which we mentioned in our press release, is chocolates, which is in total about, I think, 13,500-odd crore, growing at about 12% per annum. Now, we have to be very choiceful in how we enter these categories, the one that we have entered and the one that we will be entering, in the sense that it's not possible for us to go up against a big cereal player. In this particular case, let's say a company like Kellogg's, with a whole lot of category expertise, right? Having said that, many of these categories are under change. The cereals category today, to give you a perspective, is actually probably the breakfast cereal part of it is actually declining in the US. As people are consuming now snacks right through the day, right? There'll be a pre-breakfast, there could be a breakfast, there could be a mid-morning, there could be a, when you're leaving work for home, there are multiple occasions. So increasingly, cereal manufacturers are being forced to enter into the snack space, right? This is also true for something like chocolates, right? Where chocolate manufacturers are being forced to enter into the snack space because they need more occasions, or they need to be able to make offerings to the consumer which address smaller bites and at multiple occasions in the day, right? So in other words, many of us would hesitate today to consume a full bar of chocolate because of the amount of sugar, et cetera, et cetera. But if we still want to indulge ourselves, we'll be happy to have a little bite-sized chocolate, right? And that's where we come in. Because as a company now, which has got a good foothold and a reasonable degree of expertise, I don't say we are perfect and we are a full batch snack company, we have a pretty good expertise when it comes to batch snacks. We probably, in our universe, if I look at breakfast cereals or cereals, out of our 400,000 stores, we probably have 150,000 stores where we are uniquely distributed. We're probably neither Kellogg's nor Nestle would be there. So we have an opportunity, therefore, to make great products, right? Make them available to consumers where possibly some of our competitors will not be there because of the inherent strength that we built up in bagged snacks, and build business at a very, very low cost, right? When you combine this with the overlap of our low capital structure and therefore with a much more affordable offering to the consumer, then you have a winning composition. So to give you a perspective, therefore, the product that we just launched, Sunrock Choco Pops in breakfast cereal, is wonderful. Right, we've introduced it at 10 rupees. Neither of our competitors has our offering right now at that price point. We sell it, therefore, at about 400 rupees a kilo. The closest competitive offering is at about 600 rupees a kilo. Right, so we are competitive in terms of value, we are extremely affordable, and we can also offer cash things plus distribution points which are unique to us. So that is the reason why, if you go through our release, we've mentioned that we've introduced Sunrock Choco Pops. This is the first, the entry point for us to be able to have both a broader portfolio in breakfast cereals as over the next couple of years, and also in chocolates. We have chosen consciously to make our entry initially, therefore, through bags. That doesn't mean, let's say, that we won't have boxes of breakfast cereals. We will. But it would be very difficult for us to break big cereal manufacturers in the boxes area. It's much more feasible for us to do that in the bags area. And a similar piece logic will apply to the chocolate category when we enter there. It'd be very difficult for us to ever take on a company like Mondelez when it comes to molded chocolates, right? Molded chocolates, for those of you who are not aware, are Cadbury's Dairy Milk, so on and so forth, right? And even Count Kleins to an effect, right? Which is things like Perk or Munch or Five Star or Mars or those bars, right? But when it comes to bite size, we have a great infrastructure. We have a backstack infrastructure. We are capable of doing it, right? And we have our own unique strength, therefore, that we have developed over the last few years. So we'll keep you updated on what it is. As we have said before, we've entered now the cereal category. You call it breakfast cereal, call it cereal snacks, it doesn't really matter, right? And we'll keep you posted. This is our first step really of saying, okay, we have a 400,000 stores coverage. Now, how do we make more money out of that coverage by having a nice portfolio of products? And that portfolio of products choicefully should stay focused on categories which have higher margins. And inherently, both breakfast cereals and chocolates have much higher category margins, let's say, as compared to our legacy business of edible oils or even bagged snacks, right? I mean, at the end of the day, there is a finite amount of money that you can make out of a 5 rupees bagged snack. But when it comes to these categories, it's a lot different. So I think with that, I will hand over to our moderator, Sonam, who will then, you know, who can take over the call along with the lady. Okay, over to you.
Sir, can we begin with the question answer session now?
Sure, thank you.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We will now begin the question answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. We will take the first question from the line of Sanjay Lada from Perfect Research. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, sir. My question will be, could you please share the revenue breakup and distribution reach in a number of stores for branded food business, namely Ready to Cook and Eat Popcorn, Peanut Butter and Nachos? So your best estimate, as we know, you don't buy Nielsen data. The next will be, if we look at the advertisement spend for the past 9 quarters, it has been decreasing and the amount for this quarter has been low at rupees 4.53 crore. Any color on the same? And could you please share some thoughts on recent launch of Choco Pops and Quino Pops? Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Sanjay. So, yes, in our total coverage of about 400,000 stores, I think we've mentioned this earlier, and, you know, I won't have a lot of updated data to share with you, but probably the popcorn, instant popcorn will certainly be the widest distributed. That will be in a range of about 320,000 to 350,000 stores. Peanut butter today will be probably in the region of about 75,000 to 80,000 stores. Tortilla chips would probably be in the 50,000. And ready-to-eat popcorn and extruded snack, we are actually getting a lot of indirect distribution, right? They're actually driving a reasonable amount of volume of both of these businesses through wholesale. So it's difficult to give you a precise number. The last time we would have measured it in terms of our direct retail coverage would probably have been about 30,000-35,000 stores. But, you know, when you look at this this huge growth that they are getting in volume, and, you know, which is sometimes 80-100% a month, which also includes, for the first time, we've actually started doing direct shipment to distributors, right? So, in other words, so far we were shipping to our CFAs, and from there we would reship to distributors. So, and this is in, you know, pretty small towns. It could be a small town like Hubli. It could also be a big town like Mumbai. But that is increasing the reach disproportionately. So I would find it very, very difficult to give you, Sanjay, a good idea. If you ask me my direct, probably 25-30. If you ask me indirect, it could be any multiple of that. Okay? We'll just have to sort of, I think, take at face value that the number is pretty large, given the fact that the volume growths are in the region of 80, 100, 150% for many of these categories. Okay? In terms of A&P spends, absolutely right, and I mentioned this earlier in the call, we've actually had lower A&P spends largely because of the margin compression that we've seen on edible oils, right? We intend to be a company that continues to deliver sustained profitable growth, right, and it should be self-funding. I think our foods business is gradually getting to the point where it can be a self-funding business, right? Where in fact, and to that extent, it's actually, you know, offset much of the margin compression that we saw on oils, and as it becomes bigger, it will have a momentum completely of its own. So the reason for that is exactly that we've had lower A&P expenses. As you can see, even other expenses like wages and all have not really gone up significantly. And we have the largest part of that, or the impact of that, actually has been on instant popcorn. Okay. And last on the recent launches on You mentioned Choco Pops and also Kinder Pops, right? So yeah. So Choco Pops, I think I've given you the rationale. The product, honestly, right now is very good. I think our assessment or insight has been correct that as a low capex, low opex player, we can find a lovely, happy space for us to play as a company, as we've done in tortilla chips, where we make a good margin. We don't have to make a lot of upfront A&P investments, and we can be very, very competitive with great products. If you actually pick up the product, and I'm sure it's getting rolled out in Mumbai right now, so it should be available right now only in the 10 rupee pack. You will see the product is excellent, right? In our opinion, it is way, way better than what any of our competitors are giving us, aside from our price advantage. So it's a difficult proposition to beat, right? And Kinua Pops is a little different. You see, what we do is, as a company, we want to do some big things, but we also need to keep doing some small things, right? So there are these, you know, if you will, I think the word often used is micro segments and niche segments, where, you know, little small companies will play and they will innovate, right? And we will service the needs of micro segments. Let's say somebody is interested in quinoa. Now, we are not the first company to actually introduce quinoa. But what happens with many of these smaller companies is these products take time to build up. So, let's say if I want to build quinoa and a quinoa puffs business, I may go to 20 stores, and maybe out of those 20 stores, only 2 or 3 stores will actually have consumers who will start buying it. In the other 15 stores, I may have to actually take the stuff back. So when you are a smaller company, it's very difficult for you to actually sustain this. So what we figured is that for many in these micro and niche segments, that applies also in part to some parts of ready-to-eat popcorn, we can allow the smaller players to innovate, and they do a pretty good job of that. Smaller players, in the history of innovation, is that smaller people innovate much faster than bigger guys because that's all they have. They don't have the financial resources that the big companies have. And then we take ideas, and then we can easily execute it. And because we are not as rigid as the biggest of companies, but we are also not small, that we don't have the financial resources, and we have the tenacity to hold out, as we've demonstrated in most of the businesses that we built up, we will actually build up nice, smaller businesses. So don't expect that the quinoa pops business will be a, let's say, 100 crore business in the next couple of years. Highly unlikely, right? But should we have good expectations of revenue from Choco Pops? The answer is yes. After all, it's a 2,500 crore category. Probably the back part of it, which is, you know, the, what's it called, these 5 rupee, 10 rupee, 20 rupees price point, alone will be valued at about 300-400 crores. We can get a very nice share of that. So those can be very nice, profitable businesses. The key, however, I repeat, is for all these products is the fact that we've kept in-house manufacturer, right? So while many of our competitors have actually chosen to go to contract packers, in some cases to the same contract packer, we've chosen to keep all that expertise in-house. And I will quote from an interview which one of the Haldiram gave many years ago, and they said it very correctly. This was about five, seven years ago. He said, look, you will never be able to innovate unless you have your own plant. You must run the machine yourself. You must do the recipe yourself. You know, and that's the philosophy that we are following, and I think we can win with that. Okay? So thank you, Sanjay. And Janet, we can go to the next question.
Sure. Thank you. Next question is from the line of Sameer Gupta from India Infoline. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, sir. I have two questions. One is about the ready-to-cook portfolio, sir. I mean, I just want to get a sense on what is, like, your sense on this category. I know you have shared that this has little room for innovation, but I would still assume that it's a relatively underpenetrated category which has high headroom for growth, but we are not seeing growth in this category for quite some time, and now the trade disruptions are also behind us. So what is ailing this category? Is it just a lack of bandwidth that we have and we are focusing on the other part of the foods business, and a lack of advertising because of margin pressures in the edible oils business? Or, I mean, just a sense on, like, a word from you on this, because I believe that this is still a core part of our business, which resonates with our overall positioning. The second question, sir, would be on the edible oils business. Now, when we say anti-profiteering, sir, we have seen other companies take price increases in the wake of higher commodity costs, and here the commodity costs are actually driven by higher import duties. So I wonder, anti-profiteering, I mean, is it the time now to take price increases, or is it the competition? I mean, has the competition also responded in a similar manner? Thanks, sir. That's all from me.
Okay. Thank you, Sumit. So on ready-to-cook, absolutely right. You know, this is the core of the company. I mean, and it's not the only part, but a very significant and important part where we have strong competitive advantage. We've got the infrastructure in place. I hope it's not the lack of bandwidth. So hopefully that's not the case. I think it's very simple. This is a category which has tremendous growth potential. However, it needs two things. It needs advertising money, and it needs for us to continually expand distribution, right? As a consequence of the lower margin on edible oils, we have therefore also reduced the A&P. I think I've said that earlier, right? So as the window opens up, and you know, commodity prices don't always stay high. It's history has proven that time and time again. At the first opportunity, certainly we will increase the advertising spends. And as I've said also, over time, the category, the foods business, will be able to afford this on its own. All right. As far as edible oil pricing is concerned, the important part to recognize, and in the context of anti-profiteering, is that a very large part of our actually pass on, what we had to pass on to the consumer, has been on account of input tax credit, and a lot of that on account of service taxes as well. So let's say, and I made this comment earlier, suppose we had done a CapEx. Right now, we've passed on that benefit as well to the consumer, right? Because you have to pass on benefits of many shades. Historically, also we have always increased our prices prior to the implementation of GST by about 7 rupees a kilo ahead of cost. Post the implementation of GST, this wasn't possible, right? This wasn't possible because it would set up to be unnecessarily litigative. We can argue that look, this is something that we've been doing for the last 5 or 10 years, but as far as the law being, and the law is also relatively ambiguous on this whole subject, it was all about, you know, what margin were you making at a point in time on the 30th of June, and what did you make on the 1st of July, right? So I think we've chosen to be cautious, to play on a little on the safe side, and therefore not get into an unnecessarily litigated position. It's for us, as far as we are concerned now, it's only a matter of time now. You know, when this period ends, and we will be back to business as usual. As far as category itself is concerned, the edible oil is always going to be a competitive business, right? As I've mentioned, it's an inherently lower category margin. We have dealt with that for the last several years. I'm sure it is not going to be different in the next 5 years, right? But you simply have to have the courage to be able to take the pricing, which we've done. It has volume consequences, which you have to address. And we've done that over a period of time and steadily delivered the margin. So I don't really see an issue in the future. But this anti-profiteering piece is certainly important for us, and therefore I've put it on the table. Okay. Thank you, Sameer. And Janet, we can go to the next question.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Dhruvesh Sanghvi from Prospero Tree. Please go ahead.
Sir, just one observation about this recently new product which was launched. The pricing on the website has been written as 10 rupees for the smaller pack and 60 rupees for the larger pack. But the grammage is lower in terms of, I mean, did I see something wrong, or that is the strategy?
No, what did you see as, okay, the grammage is, it's about 400 rupees a kilo is what the price to the consumer will come out to be, Dhruvesh.
Okay, I mean, so basically the larger the pack, the higher the margin for us, or lower the margin for us, because
no,
it looked to be lower.
Yeah, the higher the price, the higher the pack, the lower the margin for us.
Okay, fine.
In the snacks business, I'll check the website, okay? And, you know, if there is anything which doesn't stack up, we'll certainly check it. But for conceptually in the bag snack, it's about the bigger the pack that you sell, the less that you spend on packaging materials, right? Not necessarily always on freight, but on packing material and the better the margin that you make. Okay?
Right. The pricing was looking different, so that is why that is the only question. Yeah, thank you
for asking. Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you and I'll check it, but thank you for raising it. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Manish Gandhi, individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Good afternoon, Sachin. Thanks for having a presentation summary on your website, which is really helpful. And my questions are...
Yeah.
Sorry?
It was your request that triggered it.
No, thanks. Appreciate. My first question is, so our distribution region-wise, so where we are strong and where we are not that strong? Because my little observation is... we are very strong in north. I'm specifically talking about our foods business. And in Mumbai, I always find that we are not available at how you are available in Noida or Banaras. So please throw some light and what we are doing to make our distribution strong in the region which you feel that we are not. That's the first question. My second question is on ready-to-eat popcorn. So, what is your strategy for marketing going forward? Will you follow the model of, say, Skinny Pops of the world, or you will be following model of the traditional marketing? And third, again on ready-to-eat, how do you see India pan out in the next 5 to 10 years? So, what we have seen in the world in the last 10 years, ready-to-eat has almost taken over ready-to-cook in many parts of the world. So, your thoughts on that? And the last one, so we always felt that we have a potential of growing 25-30% CAGR, and we always believed, but somehow because of our CapEx and other things, we could not achieve this. Now the CapEx is behind us. We have 4 plus 2 more categories. What do you feel that as a management you need to do more that we grow to 25-30% CAGR in the next 5-10 years, or is it not possible given the environment? Thank you.
Thank you, Manish. So your question is, first one on distribution expansion, I would say in sum total, we are probably relatively stronger in the south and the east, north would follow, although popcorn would be more visible in parts of the north, and west would be our weakest region, right? And that's traditionally so, largely also because west was also our weakest region in terms of the edible oil business and our distribution penetration. But that's changing, all right? So to give you a perspective, what is happening is that the larger portfolio is enabling us to be more attractive to distributors, to FMCG distributors, than we were earlier, right? So when we were just an edible oil company, we were attractive only to edible oil distributors. When we became an edible oil and IPC, instant popcorn company, we were attractive, but the popcorn business was relatively small, and the distributors could not make the kind of money that they would like to make. And oil is a very restricted distribution business. If you look at the premium edible oil, they are basically available only in about 50,000 stores in the country, right? So oil actually doesn't enable you to scale up distribution. And popcorn by itself was just too small. Ready to cook was too small a business. But it's changed. With the portfolio development today, I'll give you an example. I was working a street which is behind, just last week I was working a street behind the Scenic Mall. I think it's called A1 Industrial Estate, and there was a very, very congested area right behind it. And the portfolio was rocking. I mean, in the sense that to each retailer we were selling, literally 800 rupees worth of stock, all the different products on the hanger. Along with the bag snacks, RTC popcorn was growing in about 25-30% of the stores. So the portfolio is having an impact, particularly in West, but all over the country, right? To an extent, I would say that even people who had left the distribution system some time ago are actually coming back and saying, look, we want to become distributors again, right? And that's true not only for us, for other companies, but now we have a portfolio which is attractive. So I would say the order of the regions is what I've described, but the change point that I'm seeing today is the portfolio, and I've not seen this ever. I've not seen this actually in Bombay before. In terms of the ready-to-eat popcorn, Manish, we need both conventional marketing and the skinny pop approach. So let me elaborate. The skinny pop approach was really that of Amplify Brands was, listen, no need to spend anything much on television advertising. Just, you know, concentrate on point of sale, put promoters on the job, right, and let them reach out to consumers and support that with a bit of digital media, Facebook, so on and so forth, and you can build a nice business, which they did. They sold to Hershey's, I think, for $1.8 billion. You need that. You need that because in the early days, let's take a product like Caramel Blitz, which is a very nice product, well packaged, you know, and doing pretty good. You'll see it visible in a lot of stores. You need it because in the early days, the product can't afford that level of advertising support. It doesn't have enough consumers, right? However, once products get to a certain stage, right, then you can say, okay, I think it's ready to for us to be invest in a television advertising. Because television is still the dominant, if you will, media as far as a country like India is concerned. It won't be forever, right? We will go the route of US and Canada. To give you a context, I think for us in our Canadian business, the digital has already overtaken TV, our digital spend. And in the US, I think it's much higher, right? So it will happen in India, but it's still work. So right now, what we have to do is we have to have a combination. We have to, in the infant, in the nascent stages, we have to have all these in-store promoters, people who reach out to consumers, trial, build awareness. And then once the product reaches a certain size, put some advertising on, right? And then take it from there. We are doing that on Caramel Blitz. So we've gone through almost a year of just in-store promoters, direct contact. And I think probably in the next 1 or 2 months, we will actually be on national media with that. Ditto with a product like Diet Pop, right? Diet Pop is catering to the other opposite element of Caramel Blitz. Caramel Blitz is addressing people who want indulgence, and Diet Pop is addressing people who want health, right? So in that, we are following the same model. We did a little bit of advertising, but I think direct is probably initially, for the next few months, the much better way to go, and we'll build it to a stage where it will work on mass media, right? So the answer is both. I think RTE will be a huge category, and I think it can be profitable too. So to the related part of your question, you need to have a presence though in both the mass and the top. We need to be able to play in all segments of the market, right? If you are able to do that, it can be extremely profitable. The bottom end has no money in it, right? But the top end has money, and the middle also has money. You also, because of the nature of the beast, need to be in unconventional channels as well. So, for example, travel retail, right? Now, travel retail on a global basis is largely defined as duty-free. But travel retail in India means railway stations, airports, those kind of places, which have different requirements of types of packaging. So, if you see, actually, tumbler packs of popcorn are very popular with in some places. And they're driven by the fact that their freight cost is less, people are willing to pay more money when they're outside. So we've actually also launched a tumbler pack of popcorn in the last few weeks. So you need to be in multiple formats, and if you're there, I think we're in a strong position as far as RTE is concerned. On the growth rate, see, we actually, for a moment, if you keep aside the 30, even the 20 has eluded us, right? Because let's say this quarter it's at about 17. If I take out the vending business, it's probably 19. So even the 20 has been elusive. We've been in this range of 16 to 18. I think first we very quickly need to get past the 20, and I hope that we will do that sooner than later. Right. So let's see how the quarter three results pan out. Once that's in the bag, then our assessment is the combination of new categories and, you know, we shouldn't put all our eggs in one basket, but new categories are additive in terms of business because you don't need to invest more in distribution, more feet on street, none of that, right? It all goes through the same channel, same distributors. In fact, you get advantages in freight and supply chain. Along with continued growth in these, both the bag snacks and the spread business will definitely take us to that, from that 20 to the 25 to 30. One other thing is very important to happen, which is that in the last few years, we have actually not spent as much as we would have liked to spend on ready-to-cook popcorn, because we didn't have a portfolio and we needed to make the investments, both in terms of capital and subsequently in depreciation and plants, in these new businesses that we built up, which is largely bear snack and in the early days peanut butter. As these businesses become self-sufficient, then the pool of money available for us to invest on ready to cook will also be greater, right? So the dynamics, I guess, are strong growth in bag snacks and spreads. As these categories become profitable, it enables us to reduce the the share of our existing business earnings of popcorn that we are investing in those. So we can invest more in that and put on top, cherry on top should be the new products of cereals and chocolates, which will definitely be margin additive. There's absolutely no question of that. What this should ideally take us to a place is where we are not dependent on edible oils for gross margin, right? If you look at the history of our company, we have actually built it. We built it and, you know, we've used the profits of oils to be able to invest in plants and many other things on the foods business. I think we are gradually getting to a stage now where, you know, the foods business is independent and it can cruise along to the 500 or crore level that we want to get to sooner than later. Okay. I hope that answers your questions. And
thank you very much.
You're welcome, Manish and Janet. We can go to the next one.
Next question is from the line of Manoj Dua, individual investor. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir. My question is regarding Choco Pops only. Is it similar to Nest Plus pillow that we have to take the milk, or it is just the standalone? First. Second, I missed the opportunity size in this. You actually told in the brief in the starting. And what is your assessment we can achieve in the next 2-3 years in the time rollout presence of this product is there? And one more observation that Dhruvesh said, he is 160 rupees, has a lower grammage. I think it has a reusable pack as compared to other 10 rupee pack. Thank you.
Okay. Manoj, part of your question I didn't fully get, so I hope that I'm able to satisfactorily answer it. Okay. To your first point on Choco Pops, it's designed as a product to be able to have as a snack, and it's also designed to be had as a cereal. Okay, so why is this important? This is important because consumers are today snacking smaller amounts right through the day. Right? Some could argue it's 5 occasions, some could argue it's 7 occasions, but the fact is, none of us, because of longer commute times and many other things, are not having meals as we used to traditionally define meals, right? And that's what opens up the opportunity for a company like ours, which has a reasonable degree of snack expertise. So we're actually not saying you have it with milk or you don't have it with milk, or as some one of our competitors says, hot milk or cold milk. It doesn't really matter to us, right? We have a great product, and when you actually have this product and you have competitive products, you'll understand exactly what I'm saying, right? It is outstanding. We feel that it can satisfy all the different needs. Okay. So, it's multifunctional in that sense. In terms of our assessment, I think, I like to, if it's okay with you, you know, I'll probably like to give you a better take after 1 or 2 quarters. But as I've said, out of the total breakfast cereal market of about 2,500 crores, I think about 15 to 20% of that is in this bagged area, right? Which is, you know, where, you know, people are either single consumption or you know, possibly even, you know, 2 consumption at a shot or a shared consumption. That's the size of price I think we are very, very capable of capturing, right? Now, how much share of that we can take is I'm not able to give you a precise figure at this point in time. I think, though, that whatever size of share that is that we'll get, together with the other categories that we'll be entering very soon, should be more than enough to propel us to get to the 30. So Manisha asked the question, and I've said, look, first we get across 20. After the 20 to 30, certainly it cannot happen by itself. It needs additives and it needs new categories and to meet and profitable categories for us to significantly impact our bottom line as well, right? So it's significant enough, right? If you take a 10% share of a 250 or 300 crore category, you're talking about 25-30 crores, right? If you're making a decent margin on that, that's fairly significant in terms of our bottom line. Okay, so it's significant enough for us. Can it be a 100 crore business? Possibly, right? And that's something that we had talked about, let's say peanut butter. And I think these will be large businesses, because if the US is anything to go by, and you don't have to take my word for it, you can go and do the Google research yourself. Breakfast cereals as a category is declining. And all the occasions everybody is looking at is actually as a snack. So, in fact, the Kellogg Company has a cafe in New York. I've never been there, but I've read about it, and it's called Kellogg Snack Cafe, right? Where they're trying to say, listen, have it after dinner, have it for dinner. So, a lot of companies are actually trying to promote breakfast cereals as consumption occasions other than breakfast. That hasn't happened in India, but it will happen. It will happen. And it's evident, we're not the only company. Even Kellogg's, which has also got a similar product, is advertising on that basis only, right? So we suspect it will happen. But we have a good competitive advantage there. Right. On the resealable pack, and I'm just trying to see what exactly yes, that's right. So the pricing is correct. I've just checked on the website. It's correct. It's about, both of them are about 400 odd rupees a kilo. And in that, you know, it could be a percent here or there. And it's actually very, very attractively priced. One of our competitors has a price point of 99 rupees for 170 gram. And when you try these products, you'll see what I'm saying, right? So when it comes to resealable packs, it's a slightly different game. So as I said, a resealable pack is not like a 10 rupee bag snacks, okay? Its merchandising is different. So if you go to a store in Bombay today and you go to a grocery store, you'll find our caramel bliss packs are actually hung on what we call a strip hanger, right? Whereas the bag snack will be hung in a laddie, which could be outside the store also, mostly, right? So each of them, it has its different merchandising dynamics, but they are all important. And it's important, we'll start with the bottom, but we'll get to the top, okay? All right, Janet, thank you. Thanks, Manoj. Okay. And Janet, I think we've got the last question, yeah?
Sure. We take the last question from the line of Sameer Gupta from Indian Infoline. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for taking my question. Just a follow-up on the edible oils part. Pardon me for going deep into this, but you mentioned that there have always been pricing increases annually in this portfolio. Now, I understand that because of anti-profiteering, there hasn't been in this year, but then the consumerate impact should have come in the volume growth, and that is also not happening. So what exactly is happening in this category? And a sub-question to this is, how much time officially do we wait from taking price increases, or when is it considered to be safe to take price increases, or do we even plan to take price increases, or are we okay with the current margin structure?
Yeah. So, you have two questions for me that I'll answer both of them individually. One is, as far as volume, answer is no, not necessarily. See, when you compete in the, suppose we are in a mass market and they're selling an edible oil for 130 rupees, right? If you don't take pricing, you're going to get a volume upside. The answer is yes, right? I mean, and that's true also. For us, for example, we passed on benefits in terms of proteins. We saw a benefit in volume, right? However, when you're already relatively higher priced, let's say we're at about 200 rupees or 190 rupees, we are way ahead of the rest of the market, right? So the formula exactly doesn't work like that, right? It's not that if the price elasticity is not as clear as you would have read about when you were in management school. Okay? As far as the waiting period, as per the law, there is a two-year mandate, which is there through to 30th of June, right? And post that, this two-year period should be over, and we should all be free to take pricing exactly as we would work in a normal market atmosphere, right? So that is also the deadline that we'll be working towards.
Okay. 30th June of this year, you are saying, sir?
Hello? Sunny, 30th June of this year has passed, no?
Correct.
Two-year period will end on 30th of June, 2019. Hmm?
Okay.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Okay, Janet, we close the meeting now, all right? Hello? I think we lost the moderator, so...
No, sir, I'm here. Since this was the last question, I would like to hand the floor back to you for any closing remarks that you would like to give.
Okay. No, thank you very much. Thank you all for participating in the call. We appreciate your the time that you invest. We also appreciate your question. Okay. And I think, you know, we always, there's always a lot to learn from the interaction. Wish you all the best. And, you know, we look forward to talking to you in a couple of months. Cheers. Bye.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of Anand Rathi Shares and Stock, we conclude today's conference. Thank you for joining. You may disconnect your lines now.